Welcome back into David O. Gray Show, off code and unscripted on St. Dominic's Media, man. I was thinking before I went live that how easy it is to lose something. It's not that hard, really, to lose something if you think about it. If you think about the things in your life that was important to you, that meant something, that was a value that you lost, you think about, well, how did that happen? I think the easiest way for that to happen is just not have standards. You know, not hold fast to what you believe in, not hold fast to the truth, not have standards. If you don't have standards, things can fall apart pretty fast. If you don't have standards, it's just kind of like leaving a door open to your house. Anything can come in. And sometimes it may be too late to go back down and close that door. Something may be in your house that's going to take you out. That's how you lose things that are important. And I think that's really a story of, I think, some of the organizations that we have in the church. You know, Jesus Christ said that, you know, the gates of hell will not prevail against the church. He didn't say it wouldn't prevail against the Jesuits. He didn't say it wouldn't prevail against the Dominicans. And also, he didn't say it wouldn't prevail against the Knights of Columbus or the Knights of Peter Claver. And I think that's the way that we can get to that point where we can lose things that have been valued to a church, value to our lives, have helped us spiritually, is not have standards. So that's where we're going to get into today. And I appreciate you coming into the David L. Gray Show, off code, unscripted on St. Dominic's Media. I'm going to have a special guest on here, and almost like a whistleblower, I would say, but someone who actually really deeply cares about the Knights of Peter Claver, a member who has been a member for over 20 years. So we're going to get into some topics related to that issue of putting ourselves in a position where we can lose the thing that we love by leaving that door open, by not having standards. So, and I talked about this issue before 2 years ago, almost to date, about how Freemasons have crept into some of our fraternal organizations in the Catholic Church. Namely, I spent a lot of time talking about the Knights of Peter Claver. And so it's been 2 years now. And so it's about time we catch up, find out if the things that I said have anything changed. So that's today's show. Looking forward to your comments. And so let's get into it right about now. This is the David L. Gray Show, off code, unscripted, on St. Dominic's Media. Brother Darryl, Knight Darryl, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good, Brother David. How's everything on your end?
Man, excellent, man. So I was surprised that, you know, like I said, it's been 2 years since I had talked about an issue about some prominent members of the Knights of Peter Claver being there in an organization. And this is when I was still living in Illinois. You know, I'm living in Germany now. I was living in Illinois, and I was trying to come up there to y'all's convention and have to talk about, you know, this issue, maybe see if they could give me a workshop just to talk about it. And I think the Supreme Knight at that time, Ellis, I think he's warmed to the idea for like a hot second. And I think things went cold pretty fast. I don't know why exactly, but I'm happy to have you on, man, because I know you actually have. I know you've been a member of Knights of Peter Claver for like 20 years. You're a Navy veteran. You're a business owner. I mean, you've been a cradle Catholic. You're a cradle Catholic. Been a Catholic all your life, faithful Catholic. So you're a very reputable character, or individual character, a very reputable person. And you know, you love the fraternity, you love the church. And so, man, I'm so happy to have you on and maybe talk about some things that you've been talking about yourself on your the private channel that you have. Night Talk. Is it Night's Talk?
It's called KPC Talk.
Yeah, KPC Talk. Yeah, so, yeah, man, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, well, let me explain a little bit about things. You know, as some people may or may not know this on your channel, the Knights of Peter Claver was formed in 1909. And during that time frame that the fraternity, I mean, the organization became an insurance after a while to perform insurance for a lot of Blacks that weren't unable to get a burial insurance during that time. So the benefit was that is also to also help the Catholic Church also not to be part of any Freemasonry and also any other banned societies. So the part of that, and also as Black Catholics to bring more Black men and women, well, definitely the men back into the church fold. And that was something that was strived when it was first formed. But KPC Talk, KPC Talk came about, it was kind of inspired by two things. The 15th Supreme Knight, Gene A. Phillips, and the things that he done, because he was a devoted Catholic and devoted to KPC. And he's also was a part of Knights of Columbus. But the things that he tried to do to educate the members, get them aware of a lot of things. And, you know, and I think he tried to reach to membership. So when I came along, I'm like, well, you know, I think I talked because of the insurance that we provide for the membership. I reached out to this to Alabama that holds, you know, that, you know, helps out with the insurance part of it with us. And so what I do with them is, you know, they say, hey, you can find whatever way, means or methods you can reach out to the membership, any things that you don't like, any things they need to know. And you can do that. And he used to write, he used to send letters and emails and postage. You know, we're talking about thousands of dollars going out to the membership across the United States and you know, a couple of countries that we have that's outside the U.S. So you're talking about, you know, probably about $2,000 or $3,000 when you send postage. So social media is around. So we use the social media platform, and KPC Talk was born to put every page communication can be trans, you know, live time that you can communicate and everybody can be on the same page and know what's going on. Yeah. Unfortunately, we do have some people in leadership positions that don't like that, you know, because of the, they believe in the secrecy that doesn't really apply as far as when it comes to members in the organization.
Yeah. So KPC Talk was established just really as a benefit to have an open channel for dialogue to things that were essential to the fraternity, not dealing with any sort of secrets or anything like that. Do you have, but the Knights of Peter Claver also has a ladies auxiliary, right? Talk a little bit about that, because I think that's unique. And I like how you explain, introduce what the Knights, who the Knights of Peter Claver are since the early 1900s, 1909, I think you said. And without saying, oh, they're like the Knights of Columbus. I think that's I think that's beautiful how you explained that without having to say, oh, well, we're like something else, because I think it's a unique mission. I think the similarities are, yeah, there's degrees, there's fraternity, there's a particular type of dress, there's a culture, there's the insurance. But I love how you explain what the purpose was. But I think unique to the Knights of Peter Claver is that you have a ladies auxiliary. Talk about that.
Well, we have a lady auxiliary to help out. Well, we got, you know, and then we have a junior division as well for the juniors, for the junior knights and the junior daughters as well to be a participant. But it brings the culture of family, and that was kind of established early on to have that family environment. But not just the family. It's like the principles of what you would think of church, you know, like, you know, God, the man of the house, the wife and the kids and everybody else. So those dynamics are there when you're talking about being a true Catholic, being a true Christian of the church.
Yeah. That's beautiful. And so when I did that, let me play a clip of what I did 2 years ago. And I'm going to segue into that to ask you, like, has anything changed? All these four reasons are part of the reason why when a Knights of Peter Claver, when they meet in July this year, it's been reported to me by Freemasons that it's going to be a who's who amongst Freemasonry at this meeting. It's going to be people, including people like a former Supreme Knight of the Knights of Peter Claver, who's a Freemason. Chester J. Jones has been reported to me by a couple Freemasons. I have no reason to doubt that they're lying in this instance. This information was volunteered by one Freemason to me, and then I confirmed it with another from the Louisiana area. Have no reason to doubt this is the case based upon what they're telling me, similar stories. James E. Callahan III, who is a district deputy of the Knights of Peter Claver, who is a very accomplished Freemason, very accomplished. And he's an officer in Knights of Peter Claver. There's Oliver Mahone, who's running, who's a Freemason and running for to be their national treasurer. Again, confirmed by me from two sources who, one, again, volunteers our information, and one I had to track down and find and confirmed. So, and this is, so this is just me making this up about one of their supreme knights and one of their officers and one person who's running. And there's so many others, other names that I've been given who I didn't have two sources to confirm, but who I think are, from what I've understand, are very credible in credible stories about all of these women and men who are Freemasons and Eastern Stars that are going to be there at this upcoming convention. And primarily most of them are from New Orleans and Chicago. And Freemasonry in Chicago is a mecca. So that's, it's a mecca of Freemasonry in Chicago. So that's where they're meeting. So this national convention is going to be really just a one-stop shop to find some of the most notable Freemason Eastern Stars that are in the Catholic Church from D.C. and Chicago and from the New Orleans area. And so I was kind of shocked like 2 years ago when I discovered that information, because I knew I'd been looking at the Knights of Columbus. I know Knights of Columbus has, infested with Freemasons, especially in some areas more than others. And so it had been always disappointing to me as a Knight of Columbus that, again, the standards, you cannot be a Catholic and a Freemason. That's been a teaching since 1738. And so there's always disappointing. But when I found out, man, I kind of knew that was going to be the case, that because I knew, just being around some culturally Black churches in Columbus, I kind of knew who was there. And also when I was in St. Louis, I kind of, I see some of these emblems in the parking lot, for some reason, I just held the Knights of Peter Claver to a higher standard. I didn't know that it was also going to be there. But has anything changed in the last couple of years, Darnell?
Man, honest to tell you, no. Nothing hasn't changed. I think a lot of people that was addressed, even when I talked about it and gave insight on it, and some of it came along that because we did have a lot of Masonry, the people that was in the Masonic order, and Prince Hall. So I spoke on it. I even talked to a couple of clergy about it and asked them, hey, what is your take on having Freemasonry in the organization and in the Catholic Church? And you would be surprised that some of them said because they're dignified, Prince Hall is a little bit more different from everybody else, from whatever they was told, whatever they was taught. And, we're talking about clergies. And prior to me even doing it, Bishop Perry wrote a letter, a statement. I got to find it so I can give it to you. So you might want to put it up, talking about that we need to take it out of the Catholic Church, and especially in Knights of Peter Claver.
This is Bishop Perry, who's an auxiliary bishop of Chicago, that's passed away now. We're talking about the same one, very prominent in trying to push for the canonization of Father Augustus Houghton.
Yes.
Wow.
But he wrote something up in those guidelines and wanted Knights of Peter Claver to take an action. But like you said, when you have a festation or a lot of people that's a part of it, and when they come into play, it makes it hard because of the politics of everything.
And one person who I had spoke about in that video was James E. Callahan III. There's this video that that I know we talked about. Well, the person we talked about, and there was another person also on Facebook who sent me this video as well, and I was like, man, this is something. So let me just recap for a second. All right. This is public information that anyone can find. It's not, I'm trying to, what do you call it? Darnell.
I misspoke. Bishop Perry didn't pass away. I apologize. I just misspoke.
Okay.
Okay.
Or did he just retire? Was it retire?
Okay. One of the two. Probably retire.
So I forget what it was called when you put somebody in public information out there that's not already known. But this stuff is you can find it anywhere about Mr. James E. Callahan. As I said, he's a very prominent Freemason. And you guys know for 10 years Freemasonry was my life, right? I mean, it's what I did, and I rose to some of the highest ranks in Freemasonry for somebody that was especially not even 32 at the time. And so, but as I said in a previous video, James E. Callahan was probably the only thing. I mean, he was, of course, I had the Masonic academic side. I was traveling around the world. I was writing books on the subject, but as far as his movements in Freemasonry, the man is very accomplished. He's what's called a Knight of the York Cross of Honor, which means you had to be the head of the house of every house in New York, right? The Royal Arch, the Royal Select, the Knights Templar. You have to be elected to be the head of each one of those. Also, he's a 33rd, which means he reached the highest degree on the Scottish right side. So he has the highest honors of both sides of Freemasonry. Also an Eastern Star. Also, he's very active. Listen, I don't know how the man has time to use a bathroom or take care of his wife. And I don't say that like to be funny, because I know how I was when I was active in this organization like I was. But this brother is like, he's like doing the most. He's an officer of Knights of Peter Claver. Here he is as an officer in the Orient. That's for the House of the 33rd. So he's very active there. He's an officer there. Still there, as we said 2 years ago, and that's the most recent one right there. And he's a fraternity man, and not just any fraternity. He's a Sigma, which, if you see my video on Greek letter fraternities, the Sigmas are the closest ones that you have to Freemasonry. There, it was an organization, a Greek letter undergraduate, but also graduate chapters fraternity established by Freemasons, and in their ritual, it's very close to Freemasonry. You really can't it looks like a junior it's like a junior Freemasons, or is weird. And I say that as a person who was a member of Omega Psi Phi fraternity. And when I became a Omega man, I noticed, man, this, because I was a Freemason first, and then I joined Omega Psi Phi, and I was like, man, this is interesting. So I could tell there's some influence there, but nothing close to what goes on in initiation ritual of Sigma Phi Theta, I think that's called. And so, but this is Callahan. So he's not only a Freemason, he belongs to the junior Freemasons, the Sigmas. I find it amazing that he's in the position to teach. Here he is with some students from Xavier University, which is a historically Black Catholic university in Louisiana. Its population is largely, you know, what has a lot of Catholics, but here he is in a teaching position for the Knights of Peter Claver as a Freemason. Again, not just any Freemason. I mean, the guy is like, he's like one of the most prominent Freemasons in Prince of Freemasonry. And here he is in the organization, given this position of prominence in teaching and instruction and guidance over our youth. And I just don't. That's really disturbing to me, Darnell. It just is.
It is. You know, what brings it up is that because of, I want to say, bad politics. And mind you, even the current Supreme Knight works for the Archdiocese of Galveston. You know, you take this person that works for the Archdiocese, quote unquote, supposed to be a devoted Catholic and all this, and knows these things, but chooses to turn the other way. You know, and when you have people that speak out, what they do, they want to kick you out from messing up what they have going on within the organization, starting with the top leadership.
And that's the situation you're in with KPC Talk. Again, I think a platform that was established for the benefit of the fraternity. I know you screen your members. You make sure there's no eavesdroppers in there. That's and you make sure that you don't talk about the true secrets of the fraternity. But now they've put you in a position where they're trying to kick you out of the fraternity just for being like a lightweight, like whistleblower. But not even it's not even that. It's not like they're doing. You just want them to do the right thing, follow the Constitution, just do the right thing. And you're saying
accountability, yeah,
standards.
We teach black. You talk about black excellence, and you set a real high bar, and it's not. Just try to cultivate just around the black race, because we're all of us Christians and Catholics, and we want everybody to come in, be embraced, a part of the organization, no matter what race or sex that you are. But the thing is that you have to model what you're doing. You know, you can't say we're devoted Christians and we believe in the church, but then behind closed doors, that is not who you truly are. You know, you bring people along that fits the model that you want to export things that's not Christian values. And that's where we stand in at this given time, that we have leadership that's worried about trying to move up for a medallion instead of being true Catholics, true Christians in this organization, and try to uplift each other and hold each other accountability and hold accountability for everyone. So that's kind of where we're at right now.
Yeah. And it sounds like there's like been a change in culture, right? I think culture is important. I mean, you could lose culture. It's pretty easy, I think. But it seems that there was one culture that had been there, and now there's this shift. And I know when you and I were talking earlier this week or last week, where we were talking about, you had noticed just a lack of clergy sort of being present, especially at the conclave and around the order. How essential is it to have the priests and the bishops being close to those things, such as the Knights of Peter Claver, and as far as like keeping a strong culture? Why is that important?
It is because that brings your faith value when it comes to that culture. Being a Catholic Christian organization that works with the Catholic Church, you want that closeness. You want them to be involved. You want that spiritual guidance when you're making decisions, and you want that partnership. That hey, we're here to help you and the Catholic Church, and we want to grow the Catholic Church, but we want to do it in a positive light to have people understand that we're here to assist and help everyone, not certain group of people, not just the people we like. Everyone. And that culture kind of changed a little bit. Since I've been in, it changed around the Supreme Knight Elder Carlos Blackman.
Okay.
And which is another Supreme Knight that works hand in hand with the Catholic Church. But they're not defending the church. So we have a split. So we had the 16th and now the 18th Supreme Knight that works with that works in the diocese of in different churches, and they're not defending the Catholic Church. They're more into, like you said, if you want to bring the Freemasonry in, and we're talking about, they knew about, like, James Callahan, he's been on the board. They knew about it, and nobody spoke anything about it. Nobody said that he was in violation of anything that's been in a high-ranking officer, and they know about it. Most of the things changes under James K. Ellis as the division of the organization starts to split up, not just with the men of the Knights of Peter Claver, with the ladies, and not properly teaching the fundamentals of the organization. And that's kind of one of the reasons right now our junior division is dropping heavily. Usually here, in most of the districts between Texas and Louisiana, we're anywhere between 500 to 1,000 juniors just in these two states.
Wow.
But the decline happened so rapidly because we're not focusing on the fundamentals of the organization. And some of the people that do understand the fundamentals of the organization, and matter of fact, one of the guys that ran for Supreme Knight against James Ellis, it was a lot of clergy that wanted him to have that position. But you have people, that from fraternities, sororities, or whatever, they want to change the narrative and go against the Christian way and not even listen to their own priests. Some of the priests that have true intentions to help the organization reach its full potential.
Yeah. I think I'm with you on that. That we're Catholics, right? And we can't be too far from the church. I mean, because as I said in the opening, Jesus Christ only promised that the gates of hell won't prevail against the church. I'm not against these organizations that we have outside of it, but the closest we are to the church, the closest we are to that promise and that security and that guard. We have to be close to the magisterium. The further you are away from the magisterium, the closer you are to becoming Protestant. And so, and I think that just like Callahan III, how he's also very active in his fraternity, his Greek letter fraternity, the thing about, and you know this, I mean, from we had that background from, belonging to Greek letter fraternities, that I think, we have those things that we believe in. As Omega Psi Phi, we have manhood, scholarship, perseverance, and uplift. And even though Omega Psi Phi, we would call ourselves a Christian man's fraternity, the truth of the matter is that we're never taught that we can pursue those virtues. It's not through Christ and his grace. I don't have to pray. I don't have to receive Christ's grace to be, a man or have pursue scholarship or perseverance or uplift. In fact, there's no teaching in a fraternity that says I need Christ for that. I need his grace. Yeah, we have some biblical things and in the ritual, things like that. But it's not by Christ and his grace that I reach these virtues, right? And so this is just this. And really, that's the similarity that the fraternities, the Greek letter fraternities, would have with Freemasonry. Freemasonry teaches the same principle of indifferentism, that I can be a good Mason. I can, apply these working tools to my life and I can become a better man, but it's not through Christ and his grace. It's just my own human effort. It's my self-determination. And so if an organization, I think, has people who are just, they believe those type of things, they're in an organization, they're Freemasons, you have a lot of Greek letter people in your organizations, they would bring those things in there with them. I think in the Knights of Peter Claver, for instance, they would bring those things with them and they're in leadership positions. And this is just kind of things they believe. And so if we have people, a lot of people from these organizations that are in positions of leadership, they're active in these organizations, they really believe these things. Even though they won't say that, of course, they always say, yeah, I'm a Christian. I'm a Catholic, it's Jesus Christ. But if this is also what you're doing on the side, this pursuit of these virtues outside of Christ and his grace, you belong to organizations that that are far from the church. Then when you get in leadership positions, you're going to sort of bring sort of that culture and that ethos with you. And now your organization is being transformed into something like that, that we're pursuing these things. And pursuing these activities as an organization. And we really don't need Christ in his grace. In fact, we don't even need the clergy. We're just going to do our own thing. And so that's really scary when I hear you talk about how the Knights of Peter Claver and they're from what you've noticed over the last 20 years, that they're moving away from the church. I mean, that's scary, knowing how much influence this organization has and could even have more in a lot of our culturally Black Catholic churches in the cities and in other places where where a lot of the membership comes from. And that's really scary to me, and it's really disappointing.
Well, that goes back to the culture and the foundation. You have certain people, and you got to think about we bring people that's in that never probably heard of it. They're, they might have converted over to Catholicism. They might done a, and they probably come in the Knights of Peter Claver at an older age, and now they don't understand the foundation. And okay, instead of teaching them the foundation, the Constitution and bylaws, what we stand for, and what we should be doing, we change the scope. And the funny thing about it, like you say, you know, being a whistleblower, you know, James K. Ellis made the five pillars, you know, discrimination and all. I'm trying to think, you know, from racism, discrimination to sex trafficking and all these things. And I, and you know, when they brought it up, and I'm saying, well, how can you bring something that that's not in our part of our foundation, but you don't even practice that in the organization of freedom of speech? You don't give a platform for members to make the necessary changes that's needed in the organization. You're only catering to youths that you could control, mindsets that you can change and warp into your own vision, mindsets that you can get people. If they go against you, hey, we have the powers because we're in this high-ranking office to get rid of you. And you would think, like you said, you go back to organizations. You know, we was part of the Greek lettering. So you understand, if you ever held a position on your college campus or in a national office or, you know, the districts or whatever, you understand how things will work and move. But we have people, we have a lot of people that never achieve these type of positions. And once they get them, they don't know what to do. Mm. It's all about them. It's not about the church. It's not about the organization. It's all about them and only them.
Yeah. And so these things we bring into our organizations and in our culture that that shifted. I mean, if you, I mean, I really respect some of your thoughts. We have some good conversations, and so I want to get your input on this because it relates to some of the things we can. We leave that door open, some things that we can bring in that shouldn't be in our house, right? I can see if something is beneficial to bring it into your house or let it come into your house, but if what if something had been harmful? Why should we have that in? So I want to ask you just a question about, I know you were never a Prince Hall Freemason or Freemason, but you know history. You've been around. I mean, you're a smart guy. Over the last, would you say that what Freemasonry has done in the Black community, has it been over the past 200 something years? You look at where the Black community was coming out of slavery to where we are now. Has Prince Hall Freemasonry or the Greek Letter fraternities, the Black bourgeois class or anything like that, have they been a benefit? Has it been a help for the culture or no? What would you say? I know that's a big question. You could say yes here and no there, but I just, you know, just generally, what would you, I know you thought about this. What would you say?
Overall, I would say no. You know, the impact for it to happen, it's like you have to be a sacrificial lamb. that's the honest truth. You have to be a sacrificial lamb. Who's going to rise up? You know, who's going to bring it together and say, let's get on one page? You can say the Divine Nine, you know, you free the Prince Hall. Everyone has their hidden agendas. I have not seen an impact from as the nationwide from the Freemasonry, Divine Nine, you know, and maybe even from the Knights of Columbus. And I know Knights of Columbus do a lot of charitable and they give away a lot of money. But like me and one of the guys, that's, you know, because, you know, I have friends that are Muslim, you know, and history, you know, when you come together for a cause, a worthy cause, and move together, you can move mountains, but you got to have a sacrificial lamb. And some people don't want the scrutiny to speak out because it comes with a lot of ridicule, backlash, and that's why we're not getting anywhere. You know, we're taking things. We're taking things like, ooh, do I really want to speak out? Do I really want to say something? And I haven't seen it. not from any fraternity, sorority, anything. I see people post all their things at when they're at their national conferences from the Divine Nine. Hey, having a good time, catching up, probably, you know, you all the pleasantries. You know, the thing is that one of the best saying is that in order to become better, you have to live in uncomfort. You can't be comfortable, because if you're comfortable, you will never evolve. That uncomfortness, exactly. That people challenge, and you building up your knowledge on things and a true understanding, you are ready for battle, and you're trying to change that. You know, and we look at the world as a whole, you know, we're not, the United States says on a dollar bill, in God we trust. Mm-hmm. You know, to me, are we saying in God we trust in the bill? You know, is the money is the root of all evil for that? I mean, you got to think about, you know, things that are monumental, that is subliminal to people, mindset and change.
Yeah. That's, yeah. I think I'm with you as well. I think I would agree that overall, maybe on a personal level, I think there's people who I know have benefited from, you know, personal connections, networking and stuff like that. But as a community, as a people, it seems to be that those things, some organizations within our community, I would even apply this to the Black Protestant Church, you know, with all this division and things like that. It seems a lot of things have not brought us together as a unit. It moved us in a direction. And because of that, I think a lot of ways we're just, you know, set back from all that division and all the silliness and stuff like that. And because when I look at a nice Peter Claver, we're talking about an organization that's been around, that's older than, I think, everything but probably maybe the Alphas, maybe Sigma Pi Phi. No, I think it's older than Sigma Pi Phi. And so that's early 1900s. And we're talking about time when, you know, there were a lot of, I think by even before, I think integration, even before the 70s, even before integration, you had 1 million Black Catholics in the United States, 1 million. And per capita ratio to Black Catholics to the rest of the population, there's a more percentage then than now. So I'm like, well, how did this happen? Right. How did we lose more of the population? And of course, a lot of things will go into that, the sexual revolution, you know, secularism, you know, all, you know, a lot of things goes into that. I'm not just going to pin it on some of the institutions that we have in the community, but specifically we're talking about 1909. It just seems to me, as a person who never joined a nice Peter Claver, just listening to people like you, just being around, that it seems like the Knights aren't as far as they could have been. I mean, would you agree or disagree? And if you agree, like, why is that? Why haven't the Knights, I hate to make the comparison with the Knights of Columbus, but just the financial aspect, I think. It's right. Yeah, I mean, I know the Knights of Peter Claver have the insurance, right? But it seems like the Knights of Columbus just has the bank, right? So, talk a little bit about that.
Well, you have to think about the structure between both. Both of them are, what Knights of Peter Claver failed to realize and what Knights of Columbus is doing, you're in the people business of the Catholic Church. You're in the people business. They sell the insurance to the people that's a part of the Catholic Church. And they don't have an auxiliary, and they don't have a junior division. So when you talk about financial, in the different levels that we have, we should be blowing Knights of Columbus out.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Because you can actually reach more people, because, like, you have,
you have the ladies, and then you have the juniors as well, junior daughters and junior knights. But see, the thing is, it goes back to, we're not educating. We're not coming into church. We're not, you know, and most people in the organization teach Bible school or CCE, you know, whatever you want to call it. You know, and when they make their confirmation, and as a person that used to be a CCE teacher at one point in time, and trying to, you know, like the Bible, you know, when the priests get up there and he give you correlations in the Bible to relate to what we going on now in today's time, same thing that you have to teach to younger people that's coming in. What does it mean to be a Catholic and making your confirmation? Your duties in the church, you know, things that you have to do. We do this out of service and love. And a lot of young kids don't get that. So when they go to college, they miss those avenues because they're focusing on education in school. And now we have activities that comes around. Also, the other bigger point of Knights of Peter Claver, the financial side, is bad financial management. Like I said, when you get people that never had positions, they want, just because they have these positions, they want to fly everywhere but not contribute. They're looking at it, well, I have this right, I'm going to go here. You know, I'm going to give you an example. The director, and you can tell me this is how the financial disparity is a difference. He flew to New York to initiate three juniors. You know, you're talking about flight, hotel, get reimbursed for food for three kids. Yeah. Now, I can see if you had like 200 kids and you'd be like, you know, financially, you know, let's talk about financial. We don't teach financial education, you know, to say, you know, does this really make sense to fly all the way to New York to initiate three kids that at the return of those three kids in the insurance policy or paying their dues doesn't equal up to what you went out there for?
Wow.
You could have had.
I see why they're trying to kick you out. If you you can't get into the money, Darnell. You can't get into the money, and that's a.
but it's financial literacy, and we always, you know, the thing is, that's something that we should be teaching our young people better than anything. And we take it. Look at the athletes that come in. Financial literacy. You know, if you teach that, now how are you going to teach kids one thing? This is not, we should be living up to the motto, like I said earlier. Not saying, if I tell my child, well, hey, you don't go there, but yet I go there. Yeah. Or if I teach my kids financial literacy, say, hey, put your money to the side, save up, then, hey, you can have a nice deposit, so that, but I don't do it. And a lot of juniors, even when I was a junior night commander, they fed off that. They looked at that. Are you holding the value that you set for them?
Man, that's powerful. I think it's powerful that the Knights of Peter Claver has a youth group. I always kind of looked at that. I kind of felt the import of the auxiliary in a youth. It kind of felt Masonic to me. I mean, it's just something, you know, we did as Freemasons. You know, Eastern Stars, and you know, different jurisdictions have a different name for their youth, you know, the Pythagoreans, or you know, Demolay, whatever you call it. It felt kind of like, what are they doing here? And always kind of looked at the way your ladies dress. I was like, that feels like, but if it's Catholic, I mean, as Catholics, we've shown the world how to do things well. I mean, sometimes we've seen some of the things that the world has doing and said we could do this in the Catholic sense, and we've you know, purified it, made it holy in some sense, right? I mean, we've our church, you know, when it comes to universities, Catholic universities, when it came to hospitals, Catholic hospitals, people were already healing people already had forms of education, but when we did it right, we directed people towards God. And I always said, that looks kind of Masonic to me what the Claver is doing, but man, if it's Catholic, if they're forming a youth, because as you said, when you get to college, man, well, I wasn't a Catholic in college. You know, you were. I mean, you could probably give more testimony, obviously, to me than that. But I know, just as a kid who was just raised in an African Methodist Episcopal church, and when I got to college, what I did, I don't think I went to college one time. I mean, I don't think I went to church one time when I was in college, you know, even though I would, you know, when I was a kid. And I just started searching, and I, because that comes back to formation, right? So, man, if you guys can touch the youth and you can form them, and especially in those pivotal years when they were at college and in the fraternities and all the distractions, the girls, whatever, everything that happens, man, that's strong, man. Were you a junior knight, or have you ever been like sort of advisor with them or anything like that?
I was a junior. I was a junior at the age of 7.
Wow.
Fresh out of First Communion, went into the junior division. And and you know, looking back, even some of the people I know, you know, and I looked at some of the programs, some of the True Clavers had during that time when I was juniors that they put on, and they sacrificed their time for us. See, now we don't have people that sacrifice their times. We have, let me give you an example. Like now, we have a ladies division that's more worldly than Christian. So you think about it. What is the church for? If you're saying the man is the head, the woman is the helpmeet, and the kids and everything else, now you're saying, well, we want to be more worldly. We want Me Too movement. We want this and that. Well, that's not what we're a part of. And if that's what you think, then you need to move, because we're basing everything based on Christianity and how the church said we should be. No, the Catholic Church, you know? And it's like, you know, I know some, you know, you do have some women now that are fighting that women should be priests. You know, you have some women that want that, you know, but that's not my call to make. But does it make sense in teaching from the Bible that have you seen a woman ever be a priest? It goes back to history. So you have that. But the juniors, and to build them alone, is educating the culture of what we need to do and how we need to do it.
Yeah.
And get that mindset update. Because they, like you said, at an impressionable age, when they get to college, you got the Divine Nine. And with that Divine Nine, like you said, Phi Beta Sigma, you know, how they do their initiations might be, it may be similar. I don't know. I know how Kappa Alpha Psi is, but I can't speak anything else. Right. But you look at those things and you say, okay, and how they more worried about trying to fit in. And I think a lot of people, you know, you do have a lot of people that join a bunch of organizations to fit in. I'm not saying everybody that's part of a Masonic that I've seen or that I know, they're just doing it to, I need to fit in for recognition.
Yeah.
Some of them do it just to, hey, I just want to be a part of something. This is the closest thing because somebody reached out to me. And that's and that's something that I talked about a nice Peter Claver. You need to have a hospitality. People need to show hospitality, no matter if you know the person or not. Speak to them, say hello, how you doing? You know, be a people person. Again, you're an organization that should be a people person. You should be doing activities in your local church, getting with the priests, getting with the youth director, something for the youth, to have something at least once a month, twice a month, or you know, and divided against the other ministries to have activities. What we fall in is we have somebody that has an idea, never implemented on no level, and everybody say, okay, well, hey, long as I don't have to do it, I'm okay.
I was wondering, I want to ask you this as well. We're going to get to some questions. Thanks for everybody who's been watching, posting questions in the comment box. I'm about to shoot a lot of your questions over to Brother Darnell here and see what he thinks about them. But one thought I had within the context of what we're talking about is, why don't you think Catholicism is enough? Why is it that it seems to be for a lot of Catholics, and it's not just, you know, I would say, you know, so-called Black Americans or Hispanics or, you know, white Americans, so to speak. I don't think this is an issue that's, you know, just, you know, affects one group, but it seems to me that a lot of times it seems to be that Catholicism isn't enough. What I mean by that is that when we get to these secular movements, as you brought up, you know, the Me Too movement, it's always something going on, man. It's always, you know, a few years ago, you know, the whole Black Lives Matter was a strong movement. Before that, it was something else. There's always going to be something, right? And I noticed that as Catholics, as long as I've been a Catholic since 2006, I noticed that sometimes these movements that's out here in the world, we bring them into the church. And again, we don't try to reform them or something like that. I think there were some Catholics I noticed, they're Black Catholics, they try to have a Catholic Black Lives Matter. It was CBML or something like that. CBLM. Okay. But the thing, my critique of them at the time was that, you know, the Catholic Church, even the Me Too movement, the Catholic Church has been teaching about human dignity for hundreds of years. We have encyclicals about human dignity and how we should treat one another. These teachings are in the catechism. When it comes to things like the things that, you know, the society call, oh, this is a human right. Well, as Catholics, we believe in the right to life. We believe in the right to education, a right to work. I think anything the world can, any movement they can come up with, Darnell, I think we've had a Catholic way to speak about these issues that we can go to that encyclical or that teaching and teach from a Catholic perspective without, you know, bringing something in from the world that speaks about these things from a very worldly level, from a level of policy and governments. Oh, we need to change this law. I mean, when did changing law ever fix anything? You know, people talk about, oh, well, you know, Roe Wade isn't a law anymore. Okay, yeah. But show me one heart that hasn't changed. I mean, you look in Ohio, where I'm from, you know, the law became worse in a sense. You know, you could kill all types of babies any time of the year, any time of the pregnancy. So there was a change in law, but it clearly it's not a change in heart. And I just think we haven't focused enough as Catholics on what the church teaches. We've been trying to talk about what the world is teaching. And so what's your thoughts on that in context of what you were saying about how we bring things into the church?
Man, we bring it in. The thing is now, I think some churches and some priests are moving like a business of the big mega churches that I can see. You know, when you speak on certain things, I think it's hard for people to digest the truth. And that's kind of one of the things, because believe it or not, Roland Martin used to be a part of Knights of Peter Claver.
I didn't even know Roland Martin's a Catholic. That's news.
He used to be. But when you start and everybody knows seen Roland Martin, you know how he speak, his demeanor. You know, he's a straight shooter. And I don't think a lot of people during that time, in including now, some people just don't want to hear the truth. And certain people don't want to come from. So the thing is now the new clergy that's coming in, how they're going to address the issues. Let's bring it to the point. Let's talk about Freemasonry.
Yeah.
What do you think a priest should do once they find out that a person is a part of the Masonic order?
I've had this issue when I was in St. Louis. One of the most prominent senators at the time was, you know, he belonged to a church down there in St. Louis. Forget the name of it, but I emailed a priest about it. And Darnell, he was like, he's like, well, he doesn't flaunt it. He said, yeah, he doesn't flaunt his membership. And I said, well, it's public information on the Grand Lodge of Missouri website. And it's right there on the website that family, and they belong to your parish. He said, well, he doesn't flaunt it. And he kept going back to that. I said, okay, he doesn't really want to address the issue. So, and that's a great question. I'm glad you said that, because somebody did ask that question in the comm box. Ken Killingsworth says, he seems hard to believe Callahan's diocese would not take action to release these Freemasons from the church. A couple years ago, I did this video about this gentleman, Catholic, by the name of Malcolm Morris. Malcolm Morris was his name. Black Catholic, Grand Master, Darnell. Grand Master, the highest officer you can be in the state. Grand Master of the Freemasons in Missouri. Or was it Kansas? Yeah, it was Missouri. Grand Master. And he says he's on the website of his Grand Lodge. He said he's proud to be a fifth generation Catholic and the first Catholic in his family to be a grandmaster. I'm like, and so when Ken asked that question and then you asked that question, I don't, again, there's no standards and no accountability. And I don't know if priests can't release these men or call these men into confession and educate them, I don't know what the knights are supposed to do.
It was a supreme knight. He's deceased now. And when I talked about Freemasonry, and he kind of told, like, a priest came to him and said, hey, you need to kick him out of Knights of Peter Claver because he's a part of Freemasonry. And he gave a good answer, which that coincides with our constitution and bylaws and part of our application. He said, when you stop giving him communion is when we put him out.
Oh, okay. So the knights would then follow what the church does. I mean, that makes sense to me. I mean, that the knights would follow what the church is doing. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah.
Because you forget, we take our lead from the church. You can't ask us to do something that you're not willing to do yourself.
Yeah. 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 But I guess maybe in instances, because I know with the Knights of Columbus, I know there's been some councils that, and it, I guess it comes to the knowledge of what their priest knows or what their bishop knows. I think in the case of some, there's been some councils of Knights of Columbus where when it comes to their intake, their membership, their initiation, they specifically say in the interview process, they ask, are you a Freemason or not? Even before they become a member. And so I think that's one way, one thing we can do to guard against just the entry point. Are you Eastern Star? Are you now a Freemason? And this is what the church teaches about that.
Well, one of the ladies, I think, I guess when I put your video up about the Freemasonry and knowing that the Knights of Peter Claver had their national convention in Oklahoma City, she said she's seen it late. She said she was going to call the Archdiocese of Oklahoma and, you know, and say, hey, this guys and these guys coming up in here are Masonry and y'all going to give them communion? And she wanted them to challenge the Supreme Knight. Do not let these men attend church or turn out with the Knights of Peter Claver. And, you know, as you said, Callahan is on the national board. Well, his time is up. So he's out now. But during those time frames, you know, I think that's more accountability to hold our leadership. If you want to have, if you want to be involved in different organizations that go against the Catholic Church, point that out. Members need to hold their leadership accountable to make sure, because you, well, think what you're doing. You're having priests, a clergy, even archbishops giving communion to Freemasonry, and they don't know. They're going through their regular service. And
that's a good point. That's a good point. If you're having a meeting, I mean, if you're having at a conclave and you're going to have bishops and priests there, you got to protect them, right? I mean, that's a solid point. I mean, yeah.
So think about it. So if it get out, you say, hey, this priest gave him communion. He's part of Freemasonry. You got the priest like, wait a minute. I didn't know. How's that? You know, then think about, see, people don't look at the analytics of things, of the backlash that can come in, and how you put other people in compromising positions on the things that you're not willing to do.
Right, right. And it's about souls too. I mean, if the church is teaching what the church is teaching, that Freemasonry is harmful to our soul. I mean, if you're a Freemason or Eastern Star and you're in our organization, you're active, you're not even worthy to receive communion. That's what the church teaches. That is a type of excommunication. It's not a formal thing like we just saw with Archbishop Vigano, where the church calls him up for a trial and excommunicates guy, Latte Cynthia. It doesn't always have to be formal, but what the church is teaching, though, is that, yes, you're not worthy to receive communion because you're living in grave sin. That's what the church teaches. And so if we see a person failing like that, we see them active in Freemasonry, and we see them go up to receive communion, knowing that they're receiving it unworthily, and they're harming their soul by doing so, I think we just have to say something. Not because we're being vindictive or because we're being petty or anything like that. No, that's love. We just care about your soul, brother, you know, and what you're doing and what you're doing to your family. And so we want you to get to heaven. And so we should just be about that business of caring about souls, right?
Exactly.
And Brianna says that she's commenting on the early comment. She says, do you think it's because the mentality or mentality of belonging? She says, I noticed that more and more things do things to just belong to a group. We need to keep our eyes above. I think that was she was commenting on, we were talking about people belonging to groups, whether they're Freemasons or Greeks, and how we bring that into the organization. What do you think about what's your comment on just the selfish mentality?
That's something that needs, you know, you're supposed to have grace and mercy. You know, one of the things sayings that I started saying a while back, and a lot of people say it in KPC that knows me, people go along to get along, even when they know it's wrong. that's it. No, they know it's wrong, but they go along with the program, you know. And
why is that?
Huh?
Why is that?
My personal opinion is that I think people don't understand their value or self-worth. You know, I will not sell my integrity to do something that if someone have an issue with somebody or something like that, I'd rather resolve it than try to team up against people who teach animosity, hatred, and all those things, because that's part of being selfish. Because you don't want accountability. And those are all selfishness, you know, and that's what the direction we're going at, because of, again, people bringing in outside views into what's supposed to be the church view. Mm-hmm. You know, we're supposed to live a Christian view, a godly view, and not a worldly view.
That's a solid point. I mean, it's like we need to be. Pope Benedict XVI said it this way, that, you know, we're always we never reach a plateau like I'm Catholic. It's like, as Catholics, we don't believe in like once saved, always saved. He was talking about how being Catholic is always about converting. Even if you're not a convert, you're just always converting to the faith. Meaning you're always growing deeper in the faith. So that's just a journey I think we just always have to be on every day. Like, we're just becoming closer to Christ, becoming closer to the Holy Eucharist, becoming Catholic. If we fail to do that, then, well, what are we doing? I guess we're going backwards. If we're not becoming something, then what are we doing? Like, you mentioned this earlier about stagnation. You're either stagnant or you're moving backwards if you're not becoming in that state of being. When you're commenting about the worldly stuff we bring into the church, I think Brandon and Colin they're mentioning. Colin was saying, "Yeah, super churches here in VA. They was talking about how Starbucks bringing in Starbucks into the churches." And Brandon was saying, "Yeah, donuts before the singing service and all this stuff." Man, that's what Protestants are doing, right? I mean, we have to be. We can't. I think sometimes, whether it comes like the music we have in mass or some of the things that we do, I don't know why we're always trying to be Protestant. Do you have a critique about that? Have you ever thought about that?
The music, I put it like this: the music comes with the culture, and it comes with the culture, because even if you're Protestant or First Baptist, Second Baptist, Baptist, whatever, missionary, depending on your culture, the music's going to be different. But the thing is, do you come for the music or do you come for the word? Are you a watered-down Catholic? Are you a weekend Catholic? What type? You know, a Christian. I'm going to use Christian. Are you a watered-down Christian or weekend Christian, and whatever you want to do? But we have people don't understand. Just because you go to church, you feel good, you get the word, and you go. I've seen a lot of people that once they leave church, whatever what was said, they don't apply it to their everyday lives. I've seen people that are the most, trying to find the right word, they do the most to tear things down. They do the most. But then when something come into church, they be, oh, amen, amen. Yeah, yes, Father. Father said, he gave a word. And I'm looking, I'm like, but you're the main one. When are you going to imply this to your everyday life? And that's to me, it becomes like a hypocritical. You know, you just hypocrite. You know, you hey man, like you know, you want everybody to think you're just this godly person when you're not. You know. You know, some people do, some people show the manner. They'll speak a certain way. You'll hear elevated or elevated tone, like, yes, David, you are great. I see what you're doing. And you know, they do, they, you know, you hear that and you say, and you be like, well, they make me feel real good. I think they're a good, godly person. And behind closed doors, they're like, well, David ain't nothing. David is a troublemaker. David is David. You be like, you know? It's funny. It's funny though.
Yeah. I always said that about my grandmother. You know, she you know, man, sweet last time. I miss her so much, but man, she never heard the teaching in the church about not the gossip. Because grandma could gossip like nobody could gossip. Oh, even on a Sunday, she'd call up her friends and she just talking about everybody. She never, I always think, does the preacher ever talk about gossiping, grandma? Oh my gosh. But, about music. Yeah, I agree with you, you know, because my experience with, you know, predominantly Black Catholic churches, love the music, right? But also look at the standard. I always thought the standard was somebody like Mary Lou Williams.
Yeah.
There's a way that the culture sings. I think there's just the way that our approach towards music, there's just a cadence. There's a way, right, in the culture to work a song. And like, but she would take songs at a church, whether it's the Creed or the Our Father or the Hail Mary or whatever songs that we sing as Catholics, and she would just make it, you know, Black, so to speak. She would just make, oh, that's one of our songs. I never thought it could be sung like that, right? You know, and so, but sometimes, honestly, I don't want to hear Kirk Franklin at a mass. I don't. That's just not my thing, you know. But I get it, but.
Well, you know, with the music now and everybody, some of it is comedy for a lot of young people with some of the stuff, like mixing like hip hop, certain hip hop songs and making it Christian songs. I don't know if you ever seen some of that, but it's comical for the most part, but it's a little bit disrespectful too. You know, you'd be like, nah, they shouldn't be doing that. But that shows you their level of faith in what they're doing, because a lot of them, if you think a lot of people, and I take it from one of my family members, when I started my business, I had a great uncle tell me, and he's out of Louisiana. He said, focus on your business, church will always be there. And I thought about it. I say, he do have a point, but I was kind of hard-headed because I thought about it. I prayed about it. You know, I said, why can't I balance it? You know, have I missed opportunities business-wise because I chose church over there? Yes. But have I been blessed at the end for what the decision I make? I feel like I've been blessed in different ways that if I didn't make it about the money. I made it about my integrity.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Because our faith just has to infect, in a sense, just everything that we do. And we could bring it back our full circle to the Knights of Columbus, I guess. I mean, a Knights of Peter Claver or whatever. Everything that we do in the church, if our faith is not informing everything that we do, then what are we doing? I mean, what's forming us? Is it this thing in the world or that thing? And so we just have to be. Man, thanks for everything you're doing with. Protecting the Knights of Peter Claver. I think sometimes we need people in our life to protect us even from ourselves, right? And because one thing that we do as humans, that sometimes we get worried about the lies that people are telling us. Man, who's this? They lying to me? That's fine. All right, people lie to us. But I think the most lies that we tell, that we hear every day, are the lies we tell ourselves. We lie to ourselves all day. I mean, this is how sin happens. We do it what the serpent did to Eve. Like, we know what the church teaches. We know what the scriptures say. But then we tell ourselves, it's convenience. Like, is that what the scriptures really say? You know, or, man, do I really have to listen to that right now? Because I really want to make this move. So we need people in our lives to protect us from ourselves sometimes. And so I really see the work that you're doing. I'm so happy that a friend of mine reached out to me on Facebook and let me know about you and the work that you're doing, because I think it's so valuable. Even if the Knights of Peter Claver don't appreciate you, even if they want to try to expel you or suspend you and kick you out or punish you in some sort of way for being a friend and for trying to protect the order from itself. And we do get the leaders we deserve. Sometimes we elect people, and that's exactly what we deserve, because we don't have enough people like you, Darnell, who are there trying to stand in the gap and trying to encourage us to do better. And we see this throughout scripture. We see with the prophets always coming to the people of Israel, trying to point them to God, basically saying we could do better. We just need some standards, and we need to hold fast to what we know is true. We need to stop lying to ourselves. And so, man, I really appreciate the work that you're doing. I hope you keep doing it. I hope people in the order appreciate you. I know it's not just you. I know there's others. But man, thank you so much for everything that you're doing, man.
Not a problem. And I hope with the ladies, since they elected a new supreme lady in the Knights of Peter Claver for the ladies division, I think she's going to be the best thing for them. I hope, you know, she don't let the naysayers discourage, because she needed to be the supreme lady a long time ago, because she has I'm being honest. She has that vision. She's a devoted Catholic. Hilda Wilts, I'm expecting big things from her, because she takes accountability serious, and she accepts criticism, and she accepts accountability. And that's what I like with a leader that's not afraid to accept criticism if they're doing something wrong.
Yeah, and that's good that she didn't get discouraged, because I know how it is when you keep running for something and you keep wanting a certain position because you know God has called you to, or you know you do a great job and people don't want you in that position. But, man, God bless her for that perseverance and stand towards that goal, man. That's good. Did we leave anything on the table? I think we talked about a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I think we touched a little bit of everything.
Man, I got to have you back, man, because I like your insight on some other stuff. We got to have you on here where we're not just talking about the Knights, talk about some other stuff, man. I really enjoyed this conversation.
I appreciate it.
All right, yes, sir. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for everyone listening. This is David O. Grace, Off Code. Off Code, Unscripted, on St. Dallas Media. I'll see y'all in the next one. But until then, until next time, remember, Jesus loves you and is there for you. So go live your life like salvation matters. God bless you.